let me start by giving you some background. Back in 1970, my brother Jeff was 20 and a junior here at Kent. I was 23, recently graduated from Michigan State and starting up my working life back in New Jersey. The closest I'd ever been to Kent was Toledo. We drive down from Lansing because in Michigan the drinking age was 21 and you could get 3-2 beer here in Ohio. I never saw Kent until 1976. I had landed a job out on the West Coast, so while moving across country, I stopped here with my wife and son. I remember taking a picture of my son Jeff standing next to the monument in the parking lot. It was a cold morning, not much colder than right now, and there was snow on the ground, and Jeff was 3 years old and totally oblivious of the moment. And he's now 32, and he's over there taking pictures. And my wife, Marlene, and my daughter, Jamie, are back home in Massachusetts, and time does fly by, but lots of perspective and lots of experiences. Before I get too deep into this, and I begin to sound very formal, I want to open up with a story. For those of us who've been involved since the beginning, May 4th at Kent has taken on a life all its own, and many friendships have materialized. For me, it's about folks like Alan Canfora, here at the school. Living back east, they don't get a chance to see these friends regularly, so these anniversaries provide a welcome opportunity to catch up and trade stories. After 35 years, you'd think you'd met all the folks, but an interesting thing happened recently. In the late 70s, I moved my family to Boston. We developed a very close relationship with a couple living next door, Tom and Beth. Our kids grew up together, and we all remain close today. Well, Tom had a brother, Rusty, who lives out of town, somewhere here in the Midwest. And we'd see Rusty on holidays when their family would get together. Well, kids grow up and move away. But a few months ago, one of Tom's kids got married, and it was great to get both families back together again. There was lots of small talk. But then out of nowhere, Rusty came up and asked to talk to me in private. It turns out that Rusty was a student at Kent on that day in 1970. He saw everything and was one of the first to get to my brother after the shooting. For 28 years, he has known that I was Jeff's brother, but he could never find the right moment to talk to me about it. Suffice to say that I'll never forget that talk we had last October. Fast forward to this past Friday. Rusty sent an email that's worth reading. It talks to the effect, by the way, Rusty lives in Akron right now. It talks to the effect that day had on everyone, not just the families immediately involved. He writes, "I left campus the next day with only 10 hours of credits left to complete my degree, and I knew I would never go back. On the day after the tragedy, five friends and I left town to a 500-acre farm outside of Washington, D.C. The mix of people was very interesting. One was a saxophone player in a blues band who studied Zen Buddhism. My girlfriend was experiencing the event from a very sheltered background. I had just turned 22 and was a bit naive myself. For 3 weeks, we sorted things out while camping beside the Potomac. We fasted, wrote poetry, sang Zen chants, and for us Catholics, we did what we knew. We prayed. Every day, we lay in the fields, counting shooting stars and skinny dipping in the river. Juxtaposed to what happened, what appeared to be the most beautiful place on earth, were 2 weeks in Kent that would never be seen again in a lifetime. For the next 4 years, I traveled on a motorcycle all over the country. Then one day in 1974, while camping in the redwoods of California, someone walked up to me and asked where I lived. I couldn't answer him because I didn't have a home at the time. I knew I needed to get back to Kent and to get started with getting on with things. Well, the short and long of it all is that every year a group of us rent a cabin and we spend May 4 in the woods of Pennsylvania and we remember that day and time. Anyway, back to my speech. After 35 years, you wonder if anyone remembers. You folks here at Kent would say, of course we remember. But what about the rest of the world? Interestingly enough, I had the opportunity recently to test that question. I've been attending some classes at a local college, and this past fall I took a class in English composition. I was the only one over 28. My professor was 37, so she was just learning to talk in 1970. We had an assignment where we had to select a few poems and find a common theme which we could turn into a 7-page essay. Like most of the others, I used works from famous poets, but I wanted to do something different. So for my main focus, I chose two that I knew no one else would come up with. Both talked about war, but both also offered messages about life in a more general sense. First, there was a poem that my own brother wrote when he was 16. Jeff was in high school and he did this for a class assignment, and I'd like to read it now. It's called Where Does It End? The strife and fighting continue into the night. Mechanical birds sound of death as they buzz overhead, spitting fire into the doomed towns where the women and children run and hide in the bushes and ask why. Why are we not left to live our own lives? In the pastures converted into battlefields, the small metal pellets speed through the air, pausing occasionally to claim another victim. A teenager from a small Ohio farm clutches his side in pain, and as he feels his life ebbing away, he too asks why. Why are we dying here, thousands of miles from home, giving his life for those who did not even ask his help? The war without purpose marches on relentlessly, not stopping to mourn for its dead, contend to wait for its end. But all the frightened parents who still have their sons fear that the end is not in sight. I find my brother's poem particularly curious because of its reference to a teenager from Ohio. Back in 1966, Ohio to Jeff was just someplace west of New York where there were lots of cows. Although I must admit, I haven't seen any cows in the 2 days I've been here, so. The second work is not a poem at all. With my professor's blessing, I took Neil Young's song Ohio and treated it as a poem. The lyrics are brief. Gotta get down to it. Soldiers are cutting us down. Should have been done long ago. What if you knew her and found her dead on the ground? How can you run when you know? The entire song is only 10 lines, repeated numerous times and intermixed with a bunch of na-na-nas, but yet it has withstood the test of time. Add the rhythmical sound of drums, and it's 1970 all over again. I wonder how many successful songs look as naked without music to make them whole. Going back to the question of whether the 20-somethings of today can relate to Kent, I had the chance to find out. My professor asked me to present my essay to the class. I wondered how these kids would react. After all, 35 years is a long time. Kent to you folks is kind of like World War II is to the folks of my generation. I found that while some were clueless, others knew much more than I'd expected. My 15-minute presentation ended up taking the entire period with lots of questions and genuine interest. I found it very rewarding that Kent has remained a relevant part of history. The parallels between Vietnam, Kent, and the current war in Iraq are obvious. From your perspective as students, a major difference is the absence of a draft today. As passionate as you may be about current issues, it gets much closer to home when you have a draft to cope with. I can talk to these poems in the context of political history, but I'd rather focus on more general issues. I'd rather talk about lessons I've learned in life choices. Both of these poems talk about standing up for what you believe in. As Neil Young said, what if you knew her and found her dead on the ground? How can you run when you know? For students on that day in 1970, the issue was whether or not to stand up against the war by attending a demonstration. But every day offers us opportunities to choose. Some relate to career, some to personal relationships, or where to live. Some are major decisions, some minor, and some minor ones have more significant consequences than you might expect. The correct choice may not be obvious. For example, when choosing a career, don't necessarily go with the money. Money can be so very wrong as a reason. Even if you do prioritize money, what appears lucrative in the short term may lead to dead ends or stagnation down the road. More importantly, pick something for which you have a passion, though reading yourself can often be tough. Ask any 50-something and you'll hear stories of how inevitably you'll change. My best advice is to follow your instincts. There's a poem by Wendy Cope called The Ted Williams Villanelle where she writes, watch the ball and do your thing. The message is to not always follow the crowd or the well-intended advice of your family. Sometimes take the contrarian approach and it'll take you to a more rewarding place. One final lesson that day in 1970 is that not everything is under your control. You work hard and you try to do the right thing. Such altruistic traits may go a long way toward enriching your quality of life, but not all obstacles can be anticipated. Those kids demonstrating on campus that day had no sense of what was about to happen. Life can be so very tenuous. So the lesson is to focus on tomorrow, but not exclusively. Not at the expense of today. Maintain balance in your lives. One of the legacies of Kent is that it underscores the senselessness of war. All of us involved, directly or indirectly, take solace in knowing that May 4, 1970 contributed to a shortening of the Vietnam War. The trick now is to keep those lessons fresh so that another generation doesn't have to learn them the hard way. And that's why we're here today. That's it.